Okay, so today we're going to talk about what's been going on in Latin America in the last about 40 years, so the second half of the 20th century. Now, as I noted yesterday, I don't want you to get confused because we are going to actually back up in time and go talk about Latin America during the Cold War. So yesterday we talked about how the Cold War ended. That was pretty much focused on what was going on in the later half of the 20th century, second half of the 20th century, in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. What today we're going to do is the same basic time period, but in Latin America. Okay, so we'll actually be doing, we'll be going back and talking about what was going on during the Cold War in Latin America, and take Latin America up to just about to today. Okay, so we think about, let's remind ourselves of what was going on in Latin America last we spoke. Remember that Latin America has struggled since its independence in the early 1800s with economic imperialism. Latin America was never actually conquered again by the Europeans, but their economy was largely under the control of the Europeans and the Americans. Okay, so after the Latin American countries gained their independence in the early 1800s, they remained independent politically. However, their economies were largely under the control of American and European corporations. Okay, we talked about this we used some examples when we talked about, for example, that the coffee in Colombia, the coffee plantations in Colombia, were owned by an American company. The railroad used to transport the coffee crop to the coast was owned by an American company. The telegraph lines running alongside that railroad was owned by an American company. The port facility was owned by an American company. Okay, so really the economy of most of the Latin American countries was largely controlled by either American or European companies. This was, of course, true of Colombian coffee, but it was also true of Chile's copper, Cuba's sugar, Guatemala's bananas. The communication systems, the telephone, the telegraph, the radio of Latin America was owned by ITT, which is an American company. So for the most part, Latin America's economy in the early 1900s was controlled by either European or American companies. Most of the there was very little industrialization. Mostly they were exporting tropical crops or raw materials. Okay. This changed a little bit in the 1940s, with the rise of Juan Perón and Vargas. Remember, Juan Perón was in Argentina, and when he took power, he did support the development of some domestic industry, the building of some factories in Argentina, as did Vargas in Brazil. But remember, what happened was, although Perón and Vargas managed to take control of much of the existing technologies, much of the existing industry, what actually happened was there was all this new industry, these new technologies, which were once again built and operated by either American or European companies. So, for example, Vargas and Perón got control of the Argentinian Railroad and the Brazilian Railroad. However, the new technology was radio. And so radio was operated by an American company, actually a conglomerate of American and European companies. So they made some progress, but still large segments of the South American economy were controlled by European or American companies. Same thing happened in Mexico. Remember the PRI, which was the political party that took control of Mexico after the Mexican Revolution. They nationalized the railroads, they nationalized oil production. So some progress was made in Mexico, but again, there was still heavy involvement by American and European companies in these countries. Okay, as a result, there was problems in the 1950s, in the mid-20th century. Okay, let's look at some examples. We'll use Guatemala and Cuba as two examples. Like I told you when we first talked about the Cold War, every single political event that happened between 1945 and 1991 was somehow influenced by the Cold War. Okay? And this was 100% true of Latin America. There are two basic movements afoot in Latin America. there are socialist movements that are sort of pushing for a communist system or a system that is similar to communism, okay? Because that's the fundamental problem in Latin America is a very, very poor distribution of wealth. There's a very, very small elite. For example, in Mexico, even after the reforms of the PRI, even after the new constitution that was written after the Mexican Revolution, only 2,000 families in Mexico controlled the wealth of Mexico, and the rest of the population was largely poor. Okay, so the fundamental problem in the Latin American countries was a very, very poor distribution of wealth. A very small elite with almost all of the money, and a very large mass of poor. And the reason the poor couldn't really get ahead is because most of the industry was owned and operated by foreign companies in cooperation with this very, very small elite. And so the only jobs that were left for the poor were very low-wage labor. Okay? So the logical solution to this is a redistribution of the wealth. Well, that sounds very, very communistic. Another logical solution to this is for the governments of these countries to seize the industries from the private companies. Okay? Again, sounds very, very communistic. Anytime the government takes over industry or the government redistributes land or wealth, it's very much socialist in theory. It's very much left-wing ideas. But that's what needed to happen in Latin American countries. The governments needed to seize the coffee plantations from the American corporations so that Colombians could profit from Colombian coffee. Cuban government needed to seize sugar plantations, okay, so that Cubans could profit from the sugar produced in Cuba. However, this was sounded very, very communist whenever the government seizes property, okay? And then when the government did seize this, it needed to redistribute that wealth among the population as a whole. Again, sounds very, very communist. So there is this move in Latin America to institute many, many socialist reforms, communist-like reforms, okay? And then there's a move, largely supported by the elite, that is already very, very wealthy in Latin America, to maintain the status quo, okay? So there's one movement, let's keep things the way they are, which of course the United States supports because the United States is heavily invested in Latin America. U.S. corporations are heavily invested in Latin America. They own large amounts of land. And there's a movement to fix Latin America's problems. Okay? The Soviet Union, of course, supports the movement to fix Latin America's problems, which includes redistribution of land and government seizure of industry, nationalization of industry, and the United States supports the status quo. Okay, so let's look at one example where the United States was successful and one example where the Soviet Union was successful. In Guatemala, ultimately, the United States was successful. In 1951, a leader was elected in Guatemala that was sort of along the lines of a Perón-type figure. He was kind of making the same types of promises that Perón had made in Argentina. I'm going to, you know, redistribute the wealth. I'm going to develop Guatemalan industry. I'm going to help the Guatemalan people. Okay. Once this guy, he was democratically elected in 1951. Okay. Once he took power, he tried to seize foreign-owned companies. Okay. He tried to take land that was owned by United Fruit Company. United Fruit Company, an American corporation that grew bananas in Guatemala, was the largest landowner in Guatemala. Okay, they also controlled most of Guatemala's infrastructure, its railroads, its communications, its port facilities. Okay, in order to keep the price of bananas high in the United States, United Fruit had bought up large tracts of land in Guatemala and was keeping this land fallow, was not using it for farming, okay, because they didn't want to use all of the land to grow bananas because then there would be too many bananas on the market and the price of bananas would fall. So United Fruit was just holding this land so that nobody else would grow bananas on it and drive down the price of bananas. And then was producing bananas on some of the other land itself and selling those for considerable profit in the United States. The government of Guatemala wanted to seize that land that was laying fallow, that was unused, and distribute it to the poor people of Guatemala. Okay? Seems like a relatively reasonable thing to do. So the United States reacted by sending the CIA in, organizing a coup d'etat to overthrow this democratically elected government and put a military dictatorship into power in 1954. Okay? So again, here's how it worked. Democratically elected government is trying to pass land reform in Guatemala. They're trying to take this land that's being unused, which is owned by an American company, and distribute it to the poor people of Guatemala, okay, so that they can profit from the land and they can support themselves. When they try and do this, the United States sends in the CIA. The CIA organizes a coup d'etat and gets the military of Guatemala to overthrow the civilian government and rule Guatemala as a military dictatorship. Okay? So, pretty disastrous. And again, this is an example of why I really made the point that the Cold War was not a war for democracy. In this case, the reason the United States went in and helped the Guatemalan military overthrow the Guatemalan government was because the Guatemalan government was left-leaning. It was sort of starting to institute these socialist policies which made the United States nervous. And as a result, the United States wanted to get rid of them. Plus, the United States wanted to help the U.S. corporation that was doing business in Guatemala, United Fruit, didn't want United Fruit's land to be seized. Okay? Now let's talk about Cuba. In Cuba, U.S. companies controlled the sugar production, tourism, banking, most public utilities, like electrical, telephone, that type of thing, controlled transportation. Okay? Only 39% of the land that was owned by American sugar companies was actually being used to produce sugar in Cuba. Okay? The rest of the land was laying fallow for the same reasons that United Fruit was allowing land to lay fallow in Guatemala. They didn't want to use all of the land to produce sugar because it would drive down the price of sugar. There'd be too much sugar on the market. But the American companies wanted to continue to own the land so that nobody else would grow sugar on it. Okay? So again, Cuba, Cuba's sugar industry, its tourism industry, its banking, its public utilities, its transportation are all controlled by American companies. Okay? Of the land owned by the American sugar companies, only 39% of it is actually being used. The rest is just vacant. Okay? And the Cubans are suffering from chronic unemployment, okay? And the economy of Cuba is very, very much subjected to the supply and demand nature of the U.S. economy. So if the U.S. is doing well, Cuba's doing okay. However, there's still chronic unemployment in Cuba. But if anything goes bad in the United States, then it gets really horrible for Cuba. Okay, so Cuba seems to just be our little stepchild. Add to this the fact that the United States owned vast nickel deposits in Cuba. Nickel, the mineral that's used to actually make nickels, but it's also used for other things. There's lots and lots of nickel in Cuba. The U.S. government owned these nickel deposits, but was not exploiting them because the U.S. was holding it as reserves, just in case we ever needed it in the future. So Cuba had all of this potential wealth, lots and lots of nickel deposits, huge potential to produce sugar, had a booming tourist industry, but all of it was controlled by the United States. And so the Cubans were not profiting from their own resources. This was all supported by the government of a guy named Batista, who was the leader of Cuba. He'd been in power for some time and was quite corrupt and managed really to maintain power through the support of the United States and through dictatorial policies. Now, arrive Fidel Castro and Che Guevara. Che Guevara is the man in the picture on your screen here, which I'm sure you've seen this image on people's t-shirts a million times and you've never known who it was. But this is the fellow that helped Fidel Castro seize power in Cuba. So in 1959, Che Guevara and Fidel Castro organized a coup and overthrew the government of Cuba, overthrew the government of Batista. They immediately dismantled the Cuban military because what they were afraid of was this, that the United States would pull the same trick in Cuba that they had pulled in Guatemala. Remember, the Guatemalan military, with the support from the American CIA, overthrew the democratically elected government of Guatemala. Well, Fidel Castro and Che Guevara don't want that to happen, so they immediately dismantle the military and build a whole new military that's loyal to them. They also immediately redistribute the land. They lower rent. They raise wages. They are able to transfer 15% of the country's wealth from the rich to the poor. Fidel Castro seizes American-owned property and the property of the Cuban elite. And he does this all with financial support from the Soviets. The United States freaks out, okay, because all of these businessmen are complaining and because, of course, we're afraid communism is taking hold in Cuba. So the United States basically tries to organize the same type of thing in Cuba that they had done in Guatemala. The CIA trains Cuban refugees living in the United States. Huge numbers of Cubans left Cuba when Castro seized power. Most of them were wealthy or members of the middle class who realized that Castro was going to take their stuff. So they left Cuba and they came to the United States. So there was a large population of Cubans living in Miami. The CIA went down there, trained them, and organized an invasion of Cuban refugees into Cuba at the Bay of Pigs. It was a complete disaster. Cubans that were invading Cuba to try and overthrow Castro were defeated very, very quickly, and the United States was basically humiliated. So again, Castro and Che Guevara seize power. Castro becomes basically the leader of Cuba at this point. A bunch of Cubans leave Cuba and go to the United States. The United States CIA gets these people organized into an army and sends them back to Cuba in the hopes that they can overthrow Castro, but Castro by this point is strong enough that he's able to defeat them relatively easily, and the United States looks really, really silly. And we call this the Bay of Pigs fiasco, because the invasion was supposed to take place, did take place at the Bay of Pigs in Cuba, and it was, in fact, a fiasco. So Cuba at that point became a communist country and became a very, very staunch ally of the Soviet Union. Now, we're not real sure that Castro intended to establish a communist government in Cuba from the start, but he eventually really ended up doing it because he had so much support from the Soviet Union, okay, and did not get any support from the United States. Che Guevara went on to try and organize communist revolutions in other Latin American countries, ultimately to be killed in an attempt to do this in Bolivia. In the 1970s, Castro's success inspired other people to try and organize similar revolutions in other Latin American countries. Okay, so Castro had successfully defied the United States and successfully established a communist government for Cuba. So other people in other Latin American countries are starting to think, well, if Castro can do it in Cuba, I can do it in Argentina, or I can do it in Chile, or I can do it wherever. Okay, and Che Guevara is running around South America trying to help them do it. What ultimately happens is the United States sponsoring military regimes all over South America to stop the spread of communism. Okay, here's what basically happens. It happens first in Brazil. Brazil's democratically elected government attempts to institute some reforms that seem somewhat communist. Therefore, the military, with support from the United States, seized power in 1964, claiming that that government would not be able to protect Cuba from a potential communist revolution. Okay, so that democratically elected government was instituting some reforms, nothing crazy. It wasn't trying to establish communism, but it was sort of trying to institute reforms. And it was democratically elected. But the Brazilian military said, oh, no, we can't trust our government because they won't be able to protect us if a revolution comes, so we need to take power. So in 1964, the Brazilian military seizes power. They outlaw all political parties. They suspend the constitution, and they form death squads to go around the country to kill and torture any of their opposition. They do, however, promote industrialization, which is somewhat beneficial to the Brazilian economy. This pattern repeats all over South America and becomes known as the Brazilian solution. The Brazilian solution to communism, basically. Okay, it happens in Chile. A guy named Pinochet, he's a military leader. Again, a democratically elected president in Chile starts to nationalize some of the key industries and take over foreign-owned businesses. The United States sponsors a coup d'etat led by a guy named Pinochet. Actually, I mispronounced his name. And so this Pinochet establishes a military dictatorship in Cuba. He rolls back all of the reforms instituted by the democratically elected government of Chile. He encourages foreign investment and starts death squads to go out and kill and torture any of his opponents. Then, same thing happens in Argentina. Democratically elected president, who was actually the second wife of Juan Perón, is overthrown in a coup d'etat. A dictator rules Argentina and does basically the same thing. Okay, so what basically happens is there's these democratically elected governments in South America. Anytime they do anything that seems slightly communistic, the United States sends in support for whoever is willing to overthrow them. Whoever that is overthrows them, establishes a dictatorship, does away with all civil rights, basically, and rules the country as a dictatorship, but protects the foreign investments in those countries. Okay, all of these dictators were very careful to protect the interests of American corporations doing business in Argentina, Chile, or Brazil. Okay, so that pattern repeats itself in South America several times. Now let's talk about what goes on in Nicaragua. Nicaragua, again, we were not as successful as we would have liked to have been, like we were in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. Nicaragua in 1979, Sandinistas, a group of basically communists supported by the Cubans, were able to seize quite a bit of power. Okay. So the Sandinistas take power in Nicaragua in 1979, and they institute communist reforms, basically make Nicaragua into essentially a communist country. Okay, our president at the time was Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter took a very different approach to Latin America than previous presidents. He did not believe that we were doing the right thing by supporting these dictatorships all over Latin America, and so what he tried to do was work with these communist revolutionaries and try and sort of see if they couldn't compromise a little bit. So Carter sort of took a live and let live approach to the Sandinistas. Okay, so Nicaragua in 1979 became a communist country under the leadership of the Sandinistas, which is basically the Nicaraguan Communist Party. Okay, Jimmy Carter kind of lets them do their own thing. Okay, and sort of tries to negotiate with them. When Jimmy Carter is defeated by Ronald Reagan, things change dramatically. Reagan wants the Sandinistas out. So he supports the Contras. Okay, the Contras are basically a military organization that's trying to overthrow the Sandinistas. The U.S. Congress is not at all interested in supporting the Contras. So Ronald Reagan's administration supports the Contras by giving them weapons sort of outside of the authority of Congress, largely through illegal arms sales to Iran. U.S. military equipment is illegally sold to Iran by the executive branch of the U.S. government. The funds from those illegal arms sales are then funneled to the Contras in Nicaragua, which are fighting the communist government of Nicaragua. Okay, it's pretty complicated stuff. So again, Nicaragua, becomes a communist country under the Sandinistas in 1979. Jimmy Carter just says, whatever, let him be. Ronald Reagan comes in and wants him out, so he starts supporting a military group that's trying to overthrow the Sandinistas called the Contras. Congress isn't really willing to support Reagan on this, so Reagan's administration has to find other ways to support the Contras. So they sell weapons illegally to Iran. That money generated from the arms sales to Iran is then funneled to the Contras to help support their war against the Sandinistas. It becomes pretty much a bloody stalemate between the Sandinistas and the Contras. And finally, the Sandinistas, thinking that they have the popular support of the people, allow democratic free elections in 1990. And what actually happens is neither side wins. The Sandinistas and the Contras lose, and a sort of middle-of-the-ground government is elected in Nicaragua, government that's sort of a compromise between the Sandinistas and the Contras. Okay, so it's kind of complicated how that all happened. But basically, again, I hate to keep repeating myself, but I want to make sure this is clear. Communist government seizes power in 79. Jimmy Carter doesn't care, or he cares, but he doesn't really take them on directly. Ronald Reagan starts funneling weapons, or not weapons, but money to the Contras, who are trying to overthrow that communist government. It results in a long, nasty, bloody civil war that doesn't really yield any major victories for either side. So finally, in 1990, the Sandinistas, who think they have the support of the people, allow democratic free elections, thinking that they will easily win. In fact, they actually lose, but so do the Contras. Instead, a third party wins, who is a sort of middle party, a compromise party. And ultimately, Nicaragua returns to democratic rule after 1990. Basically, the same thing happened in El Salvador. The United States tried to send in money to fight leftist groups. And so it was. So El Salvador, unfortunately, was embroiled in this kind of civil war. A group of people supported by the United States, a group of people supported by the Soviet Union. Ultimately, though, when the Soviet Union collapsed in 91, the leftists in El Salvador kind of mellowed out, and the thing sort of settled down in El Salvador. Okay? Let's go ahead and transition to the next slide, please. Okay, let's talk about what's been going on in Latin America, specifically South America, after the Cold War ended. Remember, the Cold War ends in around 91, with the collapse of the Soviet Union. When the Cold War ended, things really got a lot better for Latin America. The military dictatorships of Argentina, Brazil, and Chile lost power from 1983 to 1990. Argentina lost power because the military government of the military dictator of Argentina decided it would be a really good idea to seize the Falkland Islands. The Falkland Islands are a British territory located just off the coast of just off the east coast of South America. So if you can visualize South America, you're down towards the southern portion of South America where Argentina is. Go out into the ocean to the east about, I don't know, maybe 200 or 300 miles, and there's a group of islands there called the Falklands. That's it belongs to Britain. The Argentinian government decided that they would seize the Falkland Islands, thinking that because they had been brought to power by the United States, that the United States would pressure the British to let the Argentinians have the Falklands. Okay, the military government of Argentina was basically the ally of the United States. So this government seized the Falkland Islands, which belonged to the British. The Argentinian government was thinking that surely the United States would go to Ronald Reagan, was the president at the time, would go to Margaret Thatcher, the prime minister of Britain, and say, hey, the Argentines are our allies, just let them have the Falklands, it's not that big of a deal. In fact, it was quite the opposite. Ronald Reagan went to Margaret Thatcher and said, you ought to go down there and kick those Argentines out of the Falklands. They got a lot of nerve seizing your territory, and actually supported Margaret Thatcher in her move to drive the Argentines out of the Falklands. So the Falkland War erupted, and it was the British versus Argentina, and they were fighting over the Falkland Islands. You can imagine who won. Obviously, the British won quite easily. And when they when the Argentines lost, the military dictators of Argentina were the military dictator of Argentina was humiliated, and ultimately democratic elections followed, and Argentina returned to democratic rule. The dictator of Chile, Pinochet, decided that he wanted to extend his power. So he held a plebiscite, which is basically a yes or no election. And in the election, he basically asked, would you like me to be your dictator and have these powers? And he expected the Chilean people to vote yes, but they actually voted no. And so he essentially got himself voted out of office. So he stepped down from power. Similar situation in Brazil, where their dictator also stepped down. By 1991, 95% of Latin America was under civilian rule and had returned to democracy. Okay, so Latin America had had, unfortunately, a long tradition of dictatorship that finally ended in 1991 with the end of the Cold War, and now Latin America has returned to civilian democratic rule. Since the end of the Cold War, Latin America has struggled not so much with dictatorship now, but now more with debt. In the early in the 1980s, oil had become incredibly expensive, and this actually worked against both the oil importing countries of Latin America and the oil exporting countries of Latin America. So the rise in oil prices in the 1980s led to Latin American countries falling into debt, whether they were oil importers or oil exporters. For the oil importers, they fell into debt because they had to borrow money to pay for the importation of oil. For the oil exporters, it got them in debt because they were making so much money from the importation of oil that they actually borrowed more money, anticipating that oil prices would stay high. Okay? So they figured, oil prices are going to stay high, so we can borrow all kinds of money, and it'll be no problem because we can pay back all that money with the money we make from exporting oil. Well, oil prices dropped, and they couldn't pay back all the loans. This was particularly bad in 1982 in Mexico, because in 1982, Mexico publicly declared that they could not repay their debt, which led to a global economic crisis. So throughout most of Latin America, the countries fell into pretty severe debt in the 1980s, okay? So a problem post-Cold War Latin America, because most of those countries remained in debt after 91. U.S. involvement in Latin America continued despite the end of the Cold War. Ronald Reagan sent troops into Grenada, so a little island in the Caribbean, to protect U.S. students there. George H.W. Bush, sent the military into Panama to arrest the president of Panama, and he's actually still sitting in jail and still sitting in a U.S. penitentiary. Manuel Noriega was the president of Panama, and he was accused of smuggling cocaine into the United States. So the U.S. George Bush sent the Marines into Panama and arrested Noriega. You can actually see him there. That's the former president of Panama there with the little U.S. Marshals Miami, Florida sign in front of him as he's being processed for his trial, for which he was convicted of drug smuggling and sent to prison in the United States. The United States has continued to put pressure on South American countries to move away from socialism and move away from socialist policies and promoting the privatization of government-owned industry and the reduction of government-provided welfare. Through the 1980s and 1990s, Latin American countries, for the most part, yielded to U.S. pressure and did move away from socialist policies. However, in the last few years, probably the last, I guess it would be the last 5 years, maybe 6 or 7 years, there has been a resurgence of socialist policies in Latin America, particularly in Venezuela and Brazil. The current president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, is very, very left-leaning. He's instituted many socialist policies, including the government seized the oil production. He nationalized oil production in Venezuela. Has instituted a series of socialist policies in Venezuela. And then the current Brazilian president, which I can't think of his name right now, also has instituted a series of socialist policies, though not nearly as extreme as Hugo Chavez. So it seems that U.S. influence in Latin America has really diminished in the last probably 5 years, although we have really dominated politics in Latin America for the last 100. Okay, we are done for today.